So first of all, just a little introduction. So what you need to do for Pesach is you need to get rid of all the chametz. You don't need to get rid of all the dirt. It's nice to get rid of all the dirt. That's a good Shabbos Yom Tov thing. But basically, the preparation for Pesach include that one should be ready for Bedikas chametz. So Shulchan Aruch says if one cleans the entire house and the house is 100% chametz free before the night of the 14th, one still has to do Bedikas chametz. Right? That's how it starts. And then he says, but even if you do Bedikas Chametz, you still have to have all the house clean before you start. So basically, Bedikas Chametz is like a last-minute check of everything else that you did. But the rule of Bedikas Chametz is that the cleaning from Bedikas Chametz has to be wherever Chametz might have been brought. That's where you have to clean. So that really depends on your household. If you have little kids, Baruch Hashem, so then they take it all over. And if you have, you know, adults who are also take food all over, you have to clean all over too. But, you know, if you have, sometimes you have adults and they don't take food out of the kitchen and dining room area. They don't never bring food to the bedroom. They never bring food to the study and so on. So then, truthfully, you would not have to check those places for chametz. You do have to check places where food might be brought during a meal. So the example given in the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara is if you have a wine cellar where you keep the wine, so then you'd have to check the top two and the front two places where the barrels of wine are kept, because you go during the meal to get a barrel of wine, and you might drop chametz there. You have to have checked it over there as well. So we have situations like that. You have a pantry. You might have a basement. You might have a garage. But you go into a meal to get a bottle of soda, whatever it is. So even though you don't eat there, but since you might go into a meal, so those have to be cleaned and checked for chametz. Okay. So, but it's not spring cleaning. I say this every year that, you know, if you want to clean the drapes, it's a very nice thing to do before Shavuos when there's less cleaning to do. And it's still spring, so before Pesach, just take care of the chametz. But wherever chametz might be, it might be. Okay. Okay, the second issue is how to destroy chametz. So there are a variety of ways to destroy chametz. One way to destroy chametz, of course, is to find it and burn it, which is what we do. One way is we nullify the chametz, so we disown the chametz, so we do that as well. One way is we sell the chametz, we do that as well. And then there's an additional aspect of destroying the chametz, and that is that in addition to getting rid of the chametz, it's a mitzvah of tashbisu. This tashbisu is to do something active to get rid of the chametz. So even if you would nullify all the chametz or sell all the chametz and have none left, that would fulfill your requirement not to own your chametz, but you would not fulfill the positive mitzvah of destroying chametz. So the minhag is that even if one has no chametz, one should get chametz. You know, the night before Pesach, to put it out, to search for it, and say you could burn it, so you can actually physically destroy your own chametz by burning. Contra Behuda, the preferable way of burning of destroying chametz tashbisu is by burning, although it could be done other ways. So that's an issue when Erev Pesach is Shabbos, not this year, when Erev Pesach is Shabbos. So that sometimes is an issue, how to get rid of it, because you can't burn, obviously, that morning. We do burn the chametz Friday morning, but Shabbos morning starts with chametz, so some say throw in the garbage, some say throw in the toilet. The different thing is what to do. What is it?
Up until what time are you supposed to burn?
So, the time... Good morning. So the time in New York is 10:25, is the time for eating chametz, and the time for burning chametz is by 11:42. Good morning, Mary. Okay. So, don't want to come to koshering, because most of the preparation for Pesach is not about cleaning, but about koshering. So, how to kosher, say, different parts of the kitchen, which is really whether it's utensils or appliances. So background to that is the following. The principle of koshering, there are two ways you can kosher something. One way is to destroy the chametz, and one way is to expunge the chametz. And most of the koshering methods we have is to expunge the chametz. And in that sense, the way of expunging the chametz, we follow the principle of Kabbalah Kachpoto, the same way something swallows, is the same way it will expunge the chametz. So therefore, if you use something for boiling, like a pot, so let's say you have a spaghetti pot, so you would kosher the spaghetti pot by boiling. And we'll come to how to do it. If you use something only by pouring something over it, so for example, the countertop, you don't cook on it, but you do spill things on the countertop, so the countertop becomes chametz by spilling something on it, so that's the way you would kosher it, is by spilling hot water on it. And things that are like a grill or a broiler, which you use directly in the fire, or for that matter, an oven, so they have to be used in direct heat, because that's the way that the item would become chametz, or tray for that matter. Okay, so there are different levels of koshering. a method of koshering. The highest level of koshering is called Liban Gamur. Most of this is actually in the booklet, I mean, I think. Is Liban Gamur, which is heating to a glow. So there's two kinds of Liban. Liban Gamur means heating something that's actually red hot or white hot, which means that sparks will fly from it. Okay, so self-cleaning, like a self-cleaning oven, gets that hot. It's 1200 degrees, it gets that hot. And if you self-clean an oven, that's only koshers the oven in the best way possible. There's a secondary way of koshering a Liban known as Liban Kal, which is called, we'll call light. Liban means to cause something white hot or red hot, but Liban Kal is that you cause it to be hot so that if you now touch the back of it with a straw, a piece of straw, the straw would burn. So it's not 100% as hot as Liban Gum, where it's direct fire, but it is one of the methods of a koshering. And typically this is how we kosher non-self-cleaning ovens. So a non-self-cleaning oven, there are two different opinions what to do. A conventional oven will come more in more detail. But one opinion is you still need Liban Gamur. And if you need Liban Gamur, so then you could either take a heavy-duty blowtorch and go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And it's not just like this, meaning you have to really actually go on each spot until it becomes red hot, which would take certainly several hours to do. Or one could be satisfied, and then the oven would be kosher according to everybody. Or you could do something called Liban Kal. So Liban Kal is to heat it to the highest temperature that's normally used for at least an hour, and then it will become, we'll call it, hot enough so that if you touch a straw to the wall of the oven, it would burn. That's called Liban Kal. According to some, Liban Kal is not sufficient. So according to me, and that's my Rebbeim, Liban Kal is sufficient for an oven, and because it's not really used on direct heat, meaning you don't cook on the walls of the oven. The broiler, you do cook, so the broiler needs Liban Gamur, has to be burnt out. But an oven, good morning, but an oven does not require Liban Gamur, because an oven does not, you don't cook with Liban Gamur, meaning you heat it in the oven, but the pan is what is heated, not the, in other words, we don't put bread on the side of our oven. If you had bread inside the oven, that would be an issue. If you had one of those ovens, we actually bake bread inside the oven, like they make laffa and pita in some of the ovens in some of these Middle Eastern restaurants. So that would be different. But the way our ovens are, so we hold the Liban Kal is sufficient. And if that's the case, you heat it to the highest temperature for an hour. You have, in order to do this, you always, whatever koshering you're doing, with the exception of Liban Gamur, you have to clean it and then wait 24 hours. The reason for cleaning it and wait 24 hours is because you clean it in order to make sure there's no actual, we call the end, actually no real chametz there. You wait 24 hours to make sure whatever taste is there, residual taste, is a negative taste. We have a principle that within 24 hours, any taste is a tam l'shavach, will give good taste to whatever puts it into. Whereas after 24 hours, whatever the taste comes out of the pan will be negative taste. So for example, if you would take a spoon, a milchik spoon, and stir your, let's say a fleshik spoon, take a fleshik spoon and stir your hot milk with it. So the hot milk obviously is milchiks and the hot spoon is fleshiks. So if the spoon had not been used 24 hours, so it has no effect whatsoever on the milk. If the spoon had used 24 hours, then you come to the issue of how much spoon is there and how much milk is there, and is it 60 times the amount of the spoon in the liquid. But let's assume it's just a tiny amount of liquid, and the spoon is over 24 hours, so the liquid would end up still being good. The spoon would be treif, so you'd have to kosher the spoon. But because the spoon is not used 24 hours, so that the taste that comes out of the spoon into the hot milk would be negative taste and would not cause it to be treif. So consequently, whenever we kosher, with the exception of Liban Gamur, we're destroying the chametz. We're not koshering, we're destroying the chametz. So, but any of the levels of koshering, you have to clean it away 24 hours. So that's true about the oven as well. You clean it away 24 hours, and then you would put it on to the highest temperature for an hour. That's called Liban Kal. So, depending what kind of oven you have, if you don't have a self-cleaning oven, so some self-cleaning ovens have the broiler and the bake inside the oven. So that there's two settings, the boil setting and a bake setting. When you put the bake setting on, the fire on the bottom goes on. And when you put a broil setting, the fire on the top goes on, and you actually broil on top of the oven. Some ovens have actually broil underneath the oven, in which case there's only one unit of fire. and that's in between beneath the oven and on top of the broiler. So that kind of oven, you put it on broil for an hour, it heats the oven to the highest temperature. But if you have the other type where you have a broil and a bake setting, then you have to kosher it twice, because when you put it on broil for an hour, the top will be as hot as it ever gets. And when you put it on bake for an hour, the bottom will be as hot as it ever gets. But not the same. You can't do them at the same time. You have to eat for an hour in order to make sure that every part of the oven gets as hot as it might ever get. That's the principle of Liban Kal, is that, again, Kabbalah Kafolto, the same way it absorbs something, that's the way it will expunge it. So it has to be the highest possible setting both ways. Okay.
Can I ask that?
Sure.
That's complicated, but if you have, I mean, I have a self-heating oven, but if you have a roast setting on your oven, is that...
So roast is like bake.
Yeah, I mean, I never really pay attention when I have it on the roast setting, but I don't know. I didn't know if the top and the bottom are...
So roast is bake.
Or like a convection type thing with the air circulating in it.
No, it's a convection oven. You have to put on the convection for an hour, because that would circulate the air.
And so that would be sufficient.
That would be sufficient. If it's convection, that would be sufficient. I assume the roast setting is the same as the bake setting. I'm not sure, really. Unless the roast...
It's a little bit different than when I bake, but I don't... In terms of where the heat source is coming from.
It could be the roast is top and bottom. Maybe that's a way of... I don't know. I mean, it blew like a rotisserie, I think. Because I know my I used to have, when I was growing up, my mother's Malarocha had this oven where it had like a rotisserie. Mm-hmm. You could put it right into the oven. So I don't really know where the fire was, but I assume, I don't really know the fire was top and bottom. I was too young to like think about this
right.
at that point.
But convection is also...
But a convection would spread the flame around. There are those who think that you have to actually clean out the fan, which makes sense, but I don't really know how to clean the fan, meaning if the fan is covered by a
grate or whatever.
Like a grate, so I don't know how you can clean the fan, really. But I think if you put it on, you know, clean the grate, then put it on highest temperature and let the convection blow, I think that would be sufficient. Okay, so that's the top two. The third way of koshering is Hagolah. Hagolah is usually translated as purging, which is through boiling water. So if you fill the pot, this is what you do. So let's suppose you want to kosher silverware, right? So you would take a pot. The pot can be any kind of pot which should not be used 24 hours. It is customary to have a koshering pot, period, all year round. Just have a koshering pot. So if you have like a pot that got ruined, you know, burnt in the bottom, that's the perfect pot for it, because you're never going to use it again. So just keep that for koshering. But the principle is that any pot that has not been used 24 hours can be used for koshering. Milchiks, fleishiks, chametz, doesn't make a difference. Just wait 24 hours, and then, because again, the taste will be negative after that, and they can use that pot. Of course, the pot has to be clean, and then wait 24 hours, and then you can use any pot. So you fill the pot with water, boil it up, so it's a racing boil. In order to keep the water bubbling, it's recommended to put some nails, like hammer nails in the bottom, and that will keep the heat to be more intense. As you dip in silverware, so you'll dip in one piece, you'll dip in another piece, dip in another piece, dip in another piece, eventually the water's going to cool down. So in between, you could put the cover back on to make sure it's bubbling, but it only works when it's bubbling. You could put more than one piece at a time. It is necessary that the pieces are not touching each other, so that if you have like 10 spoons and you line them up, you know, nestled into the spoons, that's not going to work. But if you take a net, you could take like a stocking net that you use like in the washing machine, a stocking net. I use a potato sack or an onion sack, which have, you know, good netting, and I put a few pieces in, and then you shake it around. So you know that the pieces have all come in contact with the hot water. So you can put, I would say, 3 or 4 pieces in at a time. Maybe if you're really good at it, you can do more, but you have to shake it a lot to make sure that the pieces all are surrounded by boiling water and that the water remains bubbling. Once you do that, you dip it in, you take it out, put that under, put those, whatever you koshered, you have to put under cold water.
If on the koshered sink, I mean, you have to kosher the sink first, then, no?
This, well, you could, okay.
I mean,
I don't kosher the sink first. What I really do is I just, in the sack, let it run under the cold water, and then I take them and put a towel over there. And we don't actually do silverware, but I do other things.
Right. What's cold water do?
So the cold water, so when it comes to koshering for Pesach, there's a principle you're supposed to make the pots and pans like new. So it simulates how it's made from the beginning. When you make metal, so they forge the metal, and then once it's hot, they put in cold water. So it's supposed to simulate making it new. That actually comes from, we don't say them in our shul, but there is something called Yotzros, special pews and special poems that are said on the special Shabbatos, like Shabbos HaGadol and Shabbos Parah and all these. So on Shabbos HaGadol, there's a very long poem written by Rabbi Yaakov Tuvelim, who is one of the Baalei Tosfos, and he describes all halachas that go from the beginning of the month of Nisan through Pesach, and that's how he describes it. He describes it as, and we take the silverware, we take the utensils and make them new. So that's the principle. So when we kasher during the year, it's not a requirement to put them on the cold water. It is a minhag to put them on the cold water, but that's not a requirement. In Pesach, it is a requirement to do this, so that you all this like have this notion of forging them as new.
And Pesach is like more strict in terms of what you can kasher.
Yes. Yes. This,
so that, in terms of like intricate designs, you can't
in terms of materials, in terms of materials. So in terms of always, you cannot kasher things which you can't clean properly. So things that have crevices, like filigree, probably is hard to clean, I guess. Or knives. I mean, so you could just sell. Some knives have like a wood handle and a metal, and in between, you just never get it clean. You know, that piece over there, you can't get it clean. So I think that's really a function of what you could have, what you could, like things like sieves or colanders, strainers, like spaghetti strainers. You know there's always, you just, no matter what you do, you take it out next time, but I cleaned it, so why is that piece of spaghetti still there? So, you know, because they get stuck in the small kneading boards, so those things. So that's really a function of what can be cleaned. In terms of materials, so there are different materials regarding what can be cleaned for Pesach, what can be cleaned for during the year. So for Pesach, you can really only clean materials of metal or wood or stone. Now, stone meaning like granite. What's called stoneware is not stone. That's just a fake out. It's not really stone. But theoretically, real glass. Minhag America is not to kosher glass, partially because we're not poor, so to speak. Even if we're poor, we're not poor, because not the level that they used to be poor. But part of that also, I think, is more today, in that tempered glass is that all glass today is pretty much tempered. So if you remember, because I remember this, my grandmother's from Bracha, I have copies of that.
Okay.
When I would go to my grandmother, she would give me tea, so she would put a spoon in before she put the boiling water in, because otherwise the glass would crack. Right? You don't do that anymore, because it's not glass. It's tempered glass. It's made to withstand the heat. So once you change the glass, now it's not like glass anymore. It's more like Pyrex, and Pyrex cannot be kosher for Pesach. But all those things can be kosher. So Pesach, really, it's only metal. Wood, of course, very tricky. Had a kosher wood, you can't burn, obviously, but you could put in boiling water, depending what it is. And as I say, real glass, which is pretty hard to find. Among the materials that cannot be kosher for Pesach are plastic, nomac, nylon, formica. Those can be kosher for during the year. China cannot be kosher for Pesach or for during the year, with the exception of if you have very fine china that's like from your grandmother or whatever it is.
Yeah,
so there are ways to do that after 3 years, but not for Pesach, right. Only for during the year.
Okay.
That's a special lakula. Right. Then you have things like Teflon, Corningware, Corel, Pyrex, Duralex, Melmac, Silverstone. Those things also cannot be kosher Pesach, but they can be kosher for during the year. Okay, the methods of koshering are the same, but the items to be koshered are not the same. So we're much more strict when it comes to what can be kosher Pesach. So it boils down to only metal and wood. That's the end of the day. And stone, and real stone. So the stone really application is primarily for countertops. And some people actually have stone sinks, meaning that granite that actually goes, that have a granite sink also. Okay.
Stainless steel.
Okay. Stainless steel, sure. Okay, let's go back to here. Okay, so. So Hagolah, you can kosher by, so Hagolah, we'll come back to what you can kosher each way, a few more things. If you want to kosher the pot itself, so you'd also kosher by Hagolah. So if you have a very big pot, you could put the smaller pot into it and kosher it the same way. But if you don't, you know, you can't kosher your biggest pot like that. So your biggest pot you fill with water, boil it to the top, so it's, again, bubbling, racing boil, and you... At the same time, you heat a hot rock, like the size of a bowl, heat a hot rock, and the rock with the tongs, you drop it in. Once the water is bubbling, you drop it in. You let the water cascade over the sides. The purpose of the water cascading over the sides is so that you kosher the lip the outside and inside become kosher at the same time. When you kosher the inside of something, the outside becomes kosher as well. But the lip has to be kosher by water boiling over it. So that's what you would do. And then again, you put that in cold water. You have to be very careful because when you drop the hot rock, you end up kind of like volcanoes over, and you have to like jump back. Okay. Then you have...
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm,
if you have a pot and you put it, I don't know, maybe it would be too hot for a pot, I guess, to put it in the oven while it's self-cleaning?
So if you have cast iron, you can do that. Yeah. Everything else, I think, will not. Yeah. Like stainless steel, aluminum, will it probably will buckle, whether it will get ruined altogether or no.
Right.
It will certainly get stained, you know, it won't look pretty, but that, right. You know, that's, you know, that, if you don't care about that, you don't care about that. But in terms of... If it's not flat anymore, it's not going to function. So, but as I say, cast iron, you could kosher that way. So a cast iron would withstand self-cleaning oven. The self-cleaning ovens, all the directions always tell you, don't put anything with self-clean it. They tell you don't put the racks in. They tell you don't put the burners in. So we always keep the racks in. Yes, the racks do become a little bit discolored. Who cares? Who sees it anyway? Right? And the burners do become... they will become discolored. The black ones, I don't know. We don't put the black ones in. I kosher them a different way. We'll get to that. But you could theoretically put in the burner, like the spiders. You know, put them in, self-clean them. That would work for them as well. But there's another way to kosher them. On top, also sometimes, and this I did with our previous oven, we had like stainless steel bibs underneath the spider, and I self-cleaned those, and they became very badly discolored. They looked like rainbows after that.
Just white.
So a lot of
it just burns out white.
Okay, so third method of kashering. So you have Liban Gon and Liban Kal, which is two subcategories of the same type of burning entirely. You have Hagala, which is boiling, put something into boiling water. Then you have the third level, which is Irui. So Irui, what's called Irui, Roskum Irui Rotchim. So that's pouring boiling water over something, which is just like it says. So if you have a countertop, the way that would become a tray for chametz is because things spill on it. You don't cook on the countertop. So the only way it becomes, so therefore you pour boiling water over it. Anytime you pour boiling water over it, it means that I always describe it like a crayon, you take a teapot and you go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You can't just take a big pot and like pour it over a countertop this size and hope that the water is still boiling when it gets down there. So that's why you have to go like this. You want to make sure that the water is boiling over every spot. This also works for stainless steel sinks. And again, if you have a stone sink, it works. Countertops will work if you have a stone or steel countertop. It will not work for formica, which is plastic. So formica or other synthetics, you would clean and cover. You would clean and cover. You can't really kosher them. During the year, you can kosher them. In other words, you move to a house or you trafe up your formica top, you can certainly kosher the formica top by pouring boiling water over it. Of course, anytime you do that, it's helpful to have more than one person do it, so somebody's immediately drying it to make sure the water doesn't end up behind your counters. In theory, a dish would also only require Irui, right? So let's suppose you had, we'll say a metal dish, metal dishes, right? So in theory, Irui should be enough because you don't the dishes into the boiling water. You only pour boiling water, your boiling soup, into the dishes. So theoretically, pouring boiling water over them should be enough. The minhag is not to do that. I think it's for practical reasons, if you happen to have metal dishes, not to do that. So the minhag is that anything that needs to be koshered, with the exception of things which are called standing, like a countertop, like a sink, so those we use boiling water. Anything else we don't use boiling water. I'll come back to one of the things we use boiling water for in a minute. Okay. The last is called what's called milui, and the Irui, which is filling and soaking. So Rabbi Shimon Eider, who has some chumras, he has some kulas, but some leniency, some similar strict, but one thing that he talks about is wine bechers, whether metal or glass, which are only used for wine, he says can be koshered by simply cleaning them well and then rinsing them out. That's the koshering of them. Right? After you clean them, you rinse them out again, that koshers them. Okay, but if you use it for anything else, that doesn't work. For example, apple juice can be chametz during the year. Orange juice can be chametz during the year. Today with enzymes, everything can be chametz. Pesach, wine also can be chametz. Or wine can be kidneyos. That's why you get Pesach wine, you have to be careful it actually says pee on it, because wine can be non-Pesach. But so if used for other things, so that would render it this possibly not being used. But Shemini also says that if you use them for whiskey, then they're not comfortable at all, because the taste of whiskey never leaves, and the taste of whiskey for somebody who likes whiskey is always positive, right? You know, you age it, right? The more you age it, the better, right? So therefore, he says, if you use it for whiskey, you can't use it. So my father's mother used to always have a whiskey after the fish. That was like generational. You know, we have to have a schnapps, you say, to kill the fish. Okay, so we had a designated becher that was always my father's becher in the house, and that one we never kosher Pesach. That was the becher he used. He used it for Kiddush, he used it for schnapps, and that was the schnapps becher. Everything else, we didn't use schnapps in the bechers. Now, the only issue regarding Rav Shimon Eider's leniency is whether really it's sufficient for the way we eat. So the way we eat, you know, we have things at the table, and things spill, and the dishes are washed, and things spill. So I'm not really convinced, like, no chametz ever touches these bechers. So I pour boiling water over them. I actually put them, I take the Pesach dish rack, and I put it in the sink, and I put a few bechers down like this, and I pour boiling water over them, I turn the bechers over, pour boiling water again, put a cold water on them, take them out, do the other bechers, and that's, I pour boiling water over the bechers, which is a chumrah kohen provider, right? But certainly to dip them into boiling water, if you only use it for wine, that's a super chumrah, right? So if you want to do that, that's fine. That's only sufficient. Because the general principle is, whatever kashering you need, you can always do a higher level of kashering. That's why I'm doing it in descending order.
If you put it in a Pesach dish strainer, why isn't what's coming out of the becher?
It's 24 hours, more than 24 hours old, it's a negative taste, and we don't care. And anyway, the dish strainer is a dish strainer. It's not we're not eating off of it. It's just a place to drain the dishes. When all that is done, then I kasher the sink. Right? But the dish drainer base is holding it above the sink. So, okay. Okay, all kashering has to be completed before the Zman of Isur Chametz, which whatever the time I said it was, I think 1142 in New York, 1142. So all kashering has to be finished by then, with the exception of Libun Gamur. In other words, you can still self-clean your oven. I think if you're up to this, you're pretty bad shape, but if you self-clean your oven at noon on Erev Pesach, you can do that. Of course, how are you going to cook anything? Because 3-4 hours, now it's 4 o'clock, and you only have 2-3 hours to Pesach. So, of course, one could argue, since we don't, anyway, bake meat, roast meat for the Seder, so you don't need the oven. What about Kugel? What about all the other things? Okay. Now I'm going to go through items in the kitchen, and we'll apply these principles. So, pots would require... No. According to some, they recommend that you actually just clean the door and clean the gasket around the door before you self-clean. Because that, you know, I mean, when it's sealed properly, that won't get self-cleaned from the oven. That's protecting, the self-clean coming out. But I think that's sufficient. 2 pages. This was actually in the mail. I didn't get in the mail. So that's it. Okay. It's fine. So one of the benefits is on the last page. One of the benefits of kashrut of Pesach is that every kashrut of Pesach is now parv.
If you have to switch it to the oven at some point, you didn't have to clean it before.
Say this again.
Do you have to clean the oven? If I have to switch it to melchik, say once a year I want my oven to be melchik for Shavuos or something.
So, okay, no. So, this is a general principle. So, I'm a little older than you. There's no such thing as a milchig oven, there's no such thing as a fleshig oven, all right? There's an oven, all right? I guarantee you, your grandmother, great-grandmother had one oven.
I don't know.
Nobody had two ovens. There's an oven. Okay, however, the oven could be milchig or fleshig temporarily. Uh-huh. All right, so therefore, if you bake something open, meat, then you can't bake milk open for 24 hours in that oven, all right? Assuming it's clean, right? Because the principle is steam. The steam of the meat will go on the wall, the steam of the meat will come off the wall, and therefore now you made your roast, and then you make your pizza, so the steam of the roast comes off the wall into the pizza, the taste, and you can't have that. So that you can't do. So, but on the other hand, if you bake covered, like you make your roast open, and then the next day you want to make your cheese kugel closed, and it's completely closed, that you can still put in the same oven within 24 hours.
is I always cover my milk stuff.
So fine.
But what about mamash? Like, what about if you had a piece of cheese that dripped on the... Like, how do you know that's not cheese?
No, so that's be'en, right, mamash. Be'en, you have to take off. You have to clean that off. That you have to clean off. You can't have any be'en.
Right.
So then you should look. You just look and see. Is there any, if there's schmutz, so that you have to clean off. Once the schmutz is cleaned off, you don't have to kasher it. As long as there's no be'en, no mamash, right, so then you can use it for the other.
Right.
But again, the preference, wait 24 hours, fine. But if you can't wait 24 hours, the solution is to cover it.
So they waited 24 hours, but... No.
So you have to clean the schmutz. You have to clean the schmutz. No. The schmutz doesn't become pogrom. Tom becomes pogrom.
Right.
The taste becomes pogrom. In other words, that which is in the wall of the oven becomes pogrom. That's the taste. But the piece of cheese on top, even though after a day may be disgusting, but it's not pogrom, it's still cheese.
Right.
So that gives a positive cheese taste halakhically. Right. Whether you want to eat it or not, doesn't matter. But that considered, if any be'en, it's considered to still be a positive taste.
Right, so I guess my problem with the milk plate is that, like, I don't know if when you have some grease, when I was cooking some chicken, some of the grease comes out, it's just like a black, there's black all over the oven.
Right, so you could...
I can't clean everything, a black
right.
spot.
So I think what you could do is you could take a, I'll say a sponge, you know, I'm talking the sponges that have, like, one side is black, you know, it's like steel wool, it's not really steel wool, but it's like, so it's coarse, and just, you know, clean over that spot. I think as far as the 24 hours, and then, so that would be 24 hours, that would be sufficient. You wouldn't have to kosher it, that would be sufficient. Mm-hmm. If you clean off and there's no be'en there, there's just the stain, that's sufficient. That's not sufficient for koshering an oven for Pesach. I mean, if you want to kosher the oven from treif to kosher or from chametz to Pesach, so then you have to get rid of the stains. If you clean the oven with easy off and it's still not clean, so everybody, like every single Posek says, clean it again. If you have the second time the stain is still there, then you could ignore it. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason is because, first of all, the stain is obviously in the thing now, and you already use Easy Off or some similar thing on it twice, and there's nothing more pogrom than, you know, than that taste, and you can't even stain the room.
You have to use Easy Off if you're using the self-clean?
No, self-clean by itself is sufficient.
They tell you not to, like in the self-cleaning ovens. I mean, this manufacturer, I think they say don't use the caustic kind of things in the oven.
Right.
But I guess if you have something...
Yeah, I think that those things probably will smell, and they'll probably... They might be more toxic if they get to that temperature. I don't really know. But
can I just ask you a question in terms of the mechon kleshes? In terms of covering and not covering, is that for cooking or for warming? Or it
doesn't matter. Either way.
It doesn't matter, even if you're at like a very low temperature.
No.
If something's open,
any temperature is going to make steam.
And milk is open, you need 24 hours.
Yes.
So it's not actual cooking. It's just that if it's
right, steam.
Well, if you're just warming, it's not really.
Yeah, I don't think you can depend on no steam. I think if you heat it to 120, 130, you're going to get steam. And then you may not get boiling, but you'll get steam. So and you know I don't know that the steam has to be like physics steam, but you certainly will get steam.
Clean and you waited 24 hours, and I probably got. Summer answer, but thank you. That was a problem with the par. That's really a problem because we bake a cake in the oven, right?
Right, it's the same thing.
As long as if you waited 24 hours after you do inflation, then that cake was.
That's sufficient, yes. As long as the oven was clean. After you do inflation, you can make sure the oven's clean. Wait 24 hours, and then your oven is powered.
When you say make sure the oven's clean, does that mean like wipe it out
yes.
before you use it?
Make sure there's no be'en, and then wait 24 hours, and then it's powered.
So if you bake a cake. Before the 24 hours, in a, let's say, flesh cousin, you really shouldn't be here.
So then you should need it together with coffee. I mean, assuming you put milk in your coffee. Right. You shouldn't have it together with milkix. You can have it after milkix or before milkix. It's just like it's cooked in a fleshy pot. We treat it. It's not exactly the same, but we treat it the same way. Okay, so back to koshering. So pots agala, frying pans or baking pans, libun gomer. So they would need to be directly burned on the fire with blowtorch or self-cleaned, as I pointed out before, that only probably cast iron would withstand this process. So if you have frying pans, baking pans, you really need new ones for Pesach. Spoons, forks, knives, hagala would be sufficient, right? Dip in boiling water. Kiddush cups and wine bottles use only for wine. We discussed that this meal of Iri that Rosh Hashanah says you can use. Kiddush cups, wine bottles are not used only for wine. And not what's still during the year would need Hagala, right? And again, it's a use for whiskey, so he says not at all. They can't be kosher. Okay. Just to dispel a few chumras, candle trays are not chumras. They should be washed because maybe something's on them, and put them back because you don't eat off of them anyway. So just wash them, put them back. Same thing's true for candlesticks. All kinds of other trays people have all over the place that they never put in any chametz. I think the same is true for all these candy dishes that people have in house. Candy dishes, they just put candy in them, right? And it's cold, and you wash them out. There's no, I mean, for most candy's not chametz anyway. I'm not talking about pretzel dishes. So it sits there, and probably the dish now is chametz stick. But the candy dishes, like we have in our living room, we have a candy dish. It sits with closed candies in it, you know, with the wrapped candies in it. So you just wipe it off and put it back. Just to make sure there's no chametz, that somebody like went to get a candy meal and left chametz there. But in terms of the item itself, it's not chametz stick. So dish towels, tablecloths, in theory, can be washed thoroughly and used. The minhag is, certainly we've gone dish towels, that's separate dish towels. And I think that's more because people should be like reminded that it's Pesach than anything halachic. It's just like a reminder. Tablecloths certainly can be washed thoroughly. There is an issue sometimes of the starch, so you have to know what the starch is. If the starch is chametz, so then that's a concern. You can put plastic over, probably. I imagine that the starch that you starched, if you starch your tablecloths, I imagine even though it might be chametz, it's not edible, but you still should not put food directly on it. So plastic is good, unless you're an ecologist, in which case plastic is not good. Okay.
Biodegradable.
Yes, I don't know what they make. I don't really know if they make anything like biodegradable covers like that anymore, you know, yet. I'm sure it's coming. It'll come. Okay, countertops of formica, or we'll say non-metal, non-stone, should be cleaned and covered. Real stone, such as marble or granite, can be cleaned and pour boiling water over it, again, back and forth like crayon. There are many synthetic marbles and granites. The most popular is Corian, although probably today there are some other ones that are more popular today, but there are many, many synthetic ones. It's fancy plastic, and they have to be cleaned and covered. They cannot be kosher for Pesach. There are some who are machmer even about granite, because they say that the granite, like this, you know, granite's not made in one big top. It's pieced together, and the pieced together is synthetic, so some people say that's no good. But Rav Gadol Schwartz, who's the main posek I use for these things, says it's okay, and I think most poskim say that it's okay.
Style stone? Is that it's synthetic?
What is it?
Style stone?
I imagine it is. I don't know. You have to look at the book. If you want to show me the book, yeah. I imagine synthetic. I mean,
more expensive.
Right. Right. They're pretty, you know, so, you know. Okay, so high chairs, it depends how you use them. A high chair, theoretically, has to be kosher the same as a countertop, but depends how you use them. So some people put the baby in first and then put the food down, in which case they never put food that's hot onto the countertop, right? And some people put the food down first when it's hot, and then when it cools off, they put the baby in, right? So if you put the food down when it's hot, then you have to kosher it. If you only put the baby in first, so then you don't put hot food there. So the fact, you know, if it's cool enough to give it to the baby, it's cool enough not to cause it to be common stick. Right, so you have to wash it off well. So that's a issue. But you can kosher them off. You can pour boiling water over them. That would be sufficient. In this particular case, I think even if it's plastic, that would be sufficient. I know that there are those who like put contact paper on them. I think, you know, that's a good chumrah. I'm not saying, you know, don't do it absolutely, but I think it's not necessary, because even for those who put the food down first and the baby second, I think that the, you know, what are you putting down there? I mean, you're not putting down the hot oatmeal on there. You're putting the hot oatmeal on a plate on the, right? So by the time the baby gets there and gets the oatmeal all over the place, the oatmeal's not hot anymore, right? So I think just because of the way high chairs are used, I think it can be more lenient. Okay, but again, if somebody really puts hot, you know, I don't know, hot toast on the high chair, so then they would have to kosher it properly. Otherwise, wash it thoroughly and use it. Okay, food cabinets. So food cabinets, it depends. So there are food cabinets that are used only for cans. So just take the cans out, wipe it down, and put your new cans in. But then there are food cabinets that are used for flour, and that are used for cereal, and are used for breadcrumbs. So we know there are crumbs all over the place. So those certainly should be cleaned and washed well. But I think those also have to be lined, because of the nature that maybe you can't get it so clean. But I think the ones that are used only for cans, if you have, you know, maybe you don't, you know, discriminate and you just put everything everywhere. But if you have, like, these are only for cans, so truthfully, I think that shelf, you don't really need to line. When it comes to where the dishes are, if you happen to, like, take the dishes out and put the dishes in, so suddenly you can take the dishes out, wipe it down, and put the dishes in. You don't require a lining. You want to put a lining in, you know, fine, it's nice. The refrigerator, typically, you know, I was trained, you know, from my childhood, it has to have aluminum foil in it. That's not halacha. It's just, an excellent, you know, anyway, if you do put aluminum foil in it, you have to make holes to make sure that the, you know, the air circulation don't break your refrigerator. But the refrigerator definitely has to be taken apart, because if you ever take apart your refrigerator, you know, even though you clean it every single week and your housekeeper cleans it also every single week, it doesn't make a difference. You take everything out, it's amazing what you find in the back of the refrigerator spilled over that's been there. I haven't made that in 3 months. How is that still there? And you didn't see it because you don't see it. Okay. So you really have to take apart the refrigerator, take a whole piece out, make sure that it's all clean. Once you make sure it's all clean, so then that's it. The only thing that I would say require some kind of lining on the refrigerator floor, meaning on one of the shelves, is if you're going to put something hot down, which I think most people don't do, meaning you take your roast, you let it cool off, then you put it in. That's in my house. I always say, can I put it in the oven? I can put it in the refrigerator now. No, it's not cool enough. Right? So it kind of doesn't put things in that are hot. I don't know if it's really...
It's a health thing, though, I think.
I know, it's a health thing, right.
So you're not supposed to put in hot.
Right, so I don't know if that's really true or not, but that seems to be...
You're not supposed to put hot food into the refrigerator.
It's not good for
food. So I always wonder if it's not good for that food or it's not good for the other food.
I like Jell-O.
Oh, Jell-O, okay. Jell-O you have to chill, right?
Right.
Oh, Jell-O, right. I think Jell-O you have to do it that way, right? Yeah. But I'm talking about, like, roast.
That cool off a little bit and then you put it...
I think roast and chickens is, like, the main thing, or kugels. I mean, I suspect it's not only about the chicken or the meat or the kugel. It's about the other stuff in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Because now you're making heat and it's cold and it's, you know, it's a bad temperature. You know, those in-between temperatures are bad. Okay. Anyway, but if you do put things hot into the refrigerator, so that should be, there should be something under them. Okay, the sink we discussed. The sink, if it's, again, stone or steel, you can pour boiling water over it.
Why do you put something under them if you've cleaned it?
Because it's still chametz stick. In other words, let's presume that some of your chicken soup, or we'll take cholent, which is chametz, or your chicken soup, which has matzo balls in it, which is chametz during the year, has spilled onto it. So now, the rack is chametz thick.
So you wash it off.
The only point is whether you washed it off. It doesn't make it not chametz thick. It just means, who cares? Meaning there's no chametz band there, you're not cooking with it. But fine, but now if you put something hot onto it, so now you're transmitting the heat of the...
Like, you
know, is it gonna make your roast treif? No, it's not, because that's only more than 24 hours old. You've washed it with detergent, all that. But lechachil, you're not supposed to do that. So that's why I say you put something high. You should put something under that. It could be a paper towel. It could be, you know, a piece of foil just for while you put it until it cools off. But if you are such that you want to line everything, make sure you make holes. So, okay, mixers basically really cannot be made kosher for Pesach. I mean, they theoretically could be. You can do what they call an overhaul. When you send it back to the factory, they open the whole thing. They like force blow all the stuff out of the KitchenAid and so on. It's probably not worth it. I mean,
a diehard, you know, baker maybe would do it. Like a diehard baker.
Yeah. Baker, yes, okay. You know, you'll get probably what all of us do. You get some like inferior, you know, not the least, but not the most, you know, like maybe if you make challah on Shabbos, you have like the best for challah, and for Pesach you'll have one that's not quite as good. So, one of the best gifts I guess Karen got, was somebody got us this, they want to do something for Karen, so they got her this, you know, good mixmaster for Pesach cakes, which she was always using this hand thing, you know. So anyway, Karen now makes a cake for this person every single Erev Pesach. So I think, frankly, she got the better deal, this other person, because they get a cake every Erev Pesach, and Karen's cakes for Pesach are amazing. So, of course, I get the best of the deal, because I don't have to use it, and I don't have to do it. I just have to live with that cake. Right? Okay, but anyway, you can't kasha those. Theoretically, a blender, a food processor, which have like an enclosed housing you just put on, so theoretically you can get another housing and put it on, just clean the bottom, right, and have a separate housing for Pesach. So that theoretically would be worked. Again, I don't know if it's even cost efficient anymore today. You do need a new blech. I mean, because a blech, let's face it, you can't, I mean, I don't know what your blech looks like, but my blech, like, shows, you know, this was from 1992, and it's 1994. It's like everything, you just can't get a blech clean after a certain amount of time. So you should have a new blech. When I say new blech, meaning we have a Pesach blech. We put it away with the Pesach things, and we take it out again. Okay. Oven, self-clean, we talked about leaving gummur.
I thought we used to cover the hot plate.
Oh, so a hot plate, electric hot plate, you can cover. Electric hot plate, I think an electric hot plate, actually, probably you should cover it every year during the year for Shabbos anyway, because I think electric hot plates, at least the ones I've seen, are very hot, hot enough to cook, and therefore they need a blech. So the blech doesn't, a blech could be aluminum foil. You know, you could just take two pieces of aluminum foil, stretch it over.
Or a grate,
okay, fine, so that's sufficient, so that's like a blech. So you put another one, yeah, so you cover it, that's all, you cover it. And it works.
So when you're talking about the blech, you're talking about what you're putting on your cooktop itself. You're not That's talking right, the about the ones that you...
I'm not talking about a hot plate of plata. No. The plata, so as I say, the plata you can clean and cover at the top. First of all, the plata, I think, will become clean because it's directly fire. So, but as I say, I think the plata in general for Shabbos also should be covered with something because they're so hot that they could, you could cook on them. I mean, I remember the first time I used the plata... Years and years ago, I went to, my sister has a place in Hanof, and I stayed there for Shabbos when Miros Michalas, this was in 1995, and I went for a Shabbos, and she warned me, she says, you put the food in the plata, but it's going to be burned, so make sure you put something underneath it, because the plata is so hot, by Shabbos morning, the food's going to be burned. So, I mean, from a lachem point of view, this is problematic, because it can be burned, obviously you can cook on it. You can cook on it, so then it's not, you know, so then you need a blech. Right, then you need a blech. It's like a stovetop. Okay, I mean you could use it, but it's not a blech anymore.
What's the literal? What's the English translation of blech?
Black.
Black.
Okay. It's a black piece of metal. That's right. Yeah. So they used to probably use a black piece of metal, maybe because of the term black.
And plata.
So plata is a Israeli Yiddish word for
Yiddish
plate.
Yiddish or Hebrew?
No, Hebrew.
Hebrew, yeah.
It's, you know, it's not really Hebrew.
Right.
It's because plate, hot plate, right. Plata. You know, so they.
Those are all the electric ones that you plug.
Like encyclopedia.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Those are the plug-in ones.
Those are the plug-in ones, right.
The plug-in ones. Oh, I got it. I got it. Now I got it. It says plata. It's a plate. I got it.
Okay. Right. It's a plate. So okay. They call it a plate. So they call it plata. Okay. I don't know what they call it in Yiddish. Mestam they call it plata also. But I don't know. But that's the Israeli term. Okay, so the ovens we talked about. If you have a continuous cleaning oven, it's a regular oven. Continuous cleaning oven means that they put some chemical on the walls, which they claim will make it clean, so if it works, fine, good. But that's not what helps to clean it, doesn't help to kosher it. So the same principle, if the broil and bake are in the same oven, you have two different settings, put it on broil for an hour, put it on bake at the highest temperature for an hour.
Just put it on clean and it
works? If it's self-clean, no, if it's self-clean, self-clean is sufficient for everything. But if it's not self-clean,
hours usually, self-clean.
Self-clean is 3 hours or 4 hours, but whatever, so it's 3 hours you should do.
Well, self-clean, I have three different settings for self-clean. I can do light, regular, or heavy.
3 hours. I think 3 hours minimum. I just think that, I don't really know, but I suspect that in 1 hour it doesn't really get to Liban Gomor. I think 3 hours. I mean that's 3 hours just because I think, it's not because I know. I imagine like 4 hours is saying, oh, you have so much schmutz on it, you need 4 hours. And 2 hours is probably because, I mean, mine have always had 3 or 4. So I always felt, well, 3 is enough. It could be that on the ones that have 2, 3, and 4, 2 is enough. Leery to say so because I don't really know. Empirically, you'd have to know if you have an oven which is dirty and you put it on 2 hours, what happens after 2 hours? Is it clean? Is it only ash? And so on. If that's the case, then it should be okay also. So that's empirical. So you don't want to do 2 hours and find out, no, it's not enough, and now you have to do it again. So it makes sense just do it 3 hours and, you know, unless during the year.
The ash has to be what?
Yeah, basically that ash is telling you that whatever was in there burned and became that. I assume those ashes are not like synthetic. I assume those ashes actually are the stuff in the walls that came out. I guess. What is it?
What else would it be?
I don't know. It's like a curiosity. It's like if you self-clean it for 4 hours and then wipe it all out and then self-clean again 4 hours, will you still get more ashes? We don't care, but it's a curiosity. Okay, regarding stovetop. So if you have electric stovetop, called the old traditional stovetop, when the coil is red hot, that's kosher. That's Liban Gomor. If you have a glass-covered electric cooktop. So then the place where the electric burner is will become kosher the same way, put it on high for 15 minutes till it's red hot, and that will kosher only that spot. But the rest of the glass top will not be koshered. And I've seen very creative questions about how about this, how about this, how about this, and all of those might or might not work to kosher it. They probably don't, but they might certainly work to break it. So we don't want to break it. So the best thing to do is just kosher the areas where the food goes on hot, you know, till they're red hot, and the rest of the area assume to be not usable, and put trivets down around. Don't put like foil across it, because that will probably not be good for it. Don't put a block across it, that's probably not good for it. But if you put trivets, you know, so then if you take your pot over here and put it on the trivet, so it's fine. Even if the trivet's on a place which is not kosher for Pesach, it's okay. The pot's on the trivet's on that place, and that's sufficient. You want to make sure you don't put your pot down on that place.
That's just a Pesach thing now, right?
What is it?
That's a Pesach thing now, all year thing.
Right? No, that's all year too, the same thing. Well, a full year.
Saying when he moved in that bottle room, it's outside. Saying in between, like when he moved.
Yeah, because for all right. No, that's for all year because kosher. You can't kosher the middle. You can't kosher the places that are not over the board.
You don't ship it all year around your things.
Well, when you want to put things down, but you shouldn't put things down directly on the non-koshered places. The same thing is true about your countertops, unless you have like countertops like this size mukhet, this size fleshik. But if you use your countertops interchangeably. So the same thing is true. You shouldn't put them down directly on a countertop, or you should put them on a trivet. When I say trivet, you know, you don't have to go to like, you know, Kohl's or Home Depot and get a trivet. You can use, you know, some paper towels. You can use your mitts. You can, you know, something, just something that you put down in between that you're not putting directly on that surface.
What about my induction burners?
What is this?
I have induction burners on my island.
Which means.
They only get hot with pots on them.
So kosher with a pot on it.
And then anything else is
not. No, I think only that spot, wherever you koshered, would be koshered. The whole thing works?
It has two burners.
Right, so only the burners part will become hot. Right. So or at least that hot. So on each burner, put water in the pot, obviously, because otherwise it'll ruin the pot. Put water in the pot, put the pot on, turn it on high till it's red hot, and then take the pot off, move to the other one. But the rest of the surface will not be koshered. Right.
Very difficult because the circle is only this small. My pot is not the same size as the circle. You know what I mean? It's like...
Your pot is bigger than the circle.
Mostly.
No, but that's okay.
Circles are very small, so the whole area would be considered in between the circles. Only certain...
Yeah, I still think it's okay, because I would presume, some of this is presumption, I presume that even though the circle is only this big, the domain of the circle is bigger than the circle. Meaning, the circle doesn't heat over here, but it would heat, you know, another 2 inches around, hot enough to be koshered, I think.
Well, if you put a big pot on...
I guess you could do that too, right? You can do the same thing. If you put a pot on when you kosher it, that may be a good idea. If you put a pot on when you put the heat on, put water in the pot. That's what we do to kosher. That's what we do to kosher gas burners. Kosher gas burner. So because you want to spread the flame, which is the same principle here, you want to spread the heat. Mm-hmm. You want to spread the flame. Mm-hmm. So you put on a pot. Put water in the pot so it doesn't burn, put on a pot, put the burner on 15 minutes at the highest temperature, at the highest, you know, at the high setting, so that and the pot's there to spread the flame. So the pot would do the same thing here, the pot would spread the heat. So I think that's probably a good idea. It doesn't matter really what pot on the burner, just a pot that hasn't been used 24 hours. If it's a hummus pot that has not been 24 hours, so that would kosher the area that the pot covers. Right, because the heat would be spreading through the pot to the rest of the area.
Biggest pot.
To the degree, it would heat it to the degree that it ever gets heated when you cook. So that would be Kabbalah Kafoto, that would be the principle. Okay, assuming you don't have a glass cooktop, so then you would cover the rest of the cooktop. If it's stainless steel, you can kosher a stainless steel cooktop either by putting a blech on and burning the whole burn, put all the burners on at once, that would be okay. If you have ceramic, that will crack the ceramic, but stainless steel should work. Or you could pour boiling water over the stainless steel, and that would work. But other than that, you should cover it. You should cover the rest of it with whatever. I mean, we use aluminum foil. You know, we had the ceramic top. Now the stainless steel top. What is it? I don't think it's going to do anything for the glass, but it might ruin the glass.
It's not kosher. They don't kosher like that.
The glass took top. All the things I've read, CRC, Star K, OU, they all say glass cooktop can't be done. And some of them, like, answering questions. I tried this, I tried that.
I'm assuming it's glass.
No, it's not glass. It's not glass. It's a composite of things which are like more like Pyrex. It's like super Pyrex.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if you put glass, I don't care what glass, if you put a glass on a fire, it's going to destroy it. So it can't be glass.
It's, well, I don't know what it is.
Right. No, it's a composite. So it's a synthetic composite of materials that somehow withstand heat, and they make it shiny and clear like glass, and they call it a glass cooktop. But certainly it's not. I mean, the closest it could be glass is called super tempered glass. But because of that, so it's not really like, it's not like glass anymore.
So what do you cover it with?
You don't. You just put trivets down when you want to put things down.
Oh, because I know Shoshana. I'm going to tell her to call you because she has that kind of...
Okay, so that's what you should do. She can call me, but she'll be honest. Okay.
And with the stainless steel cooktop again, just put the black.
So stainless steel, you can put the black over the grates and kasha them all at once. Okay. Put them all on high, 15 minutes, and that will kasha the whole thing, the grates including the cooktops.
No, wait, say that again?
If you have stainless steel top...
Are you talking about stainless steel top, or are you talking about...
Both. If you have... So what I described before, you take a pot and you kasha and you put the fire on, that's going to kasha the grate. Right? Now, I take my grates are very big. They're like... Mm-hmm. They cover the guy's front... It's like front to back, front to back.
Right.
I put them in the self-clean. That's what I do. All right?
That's what I do.
Because they're too big, and I don't even feel I can get them all hot at once otherwise. So I put them in the self-clean. But one could put on a blech across the top and put all the burners on at once, and that would kasha all of the grates, the spiders, and would kasha all of the bottom. Stainless steel, if it's ceramic, it's going to crack it. You know, if it's colored, white, yellow, all those colors, it's ceramic, it's going to crack.
The burners with the grates on them, right?
Right.
The grates are on them, because I have to put the pot on something, right? So why aren't the grates getting kosher?
So it depends how big. No, so they would. If the grate is, I'll call it discrete.
Right,
let's suppose the grate is this big.
Right, but it's not. I have.
All yeah. So then what about the area in between? In other words, that's getting hot. That's getting hot. And the area in between, how hot is that getting?
Well, I don't remember.
No, fine. There's a pot here and a pot there. And what about the middle area? There's no pot on there. It was the old one.
All sitting next to each other.
Anyway, that's you know, that's kind of like an eyeball thing. You know, what do you think it looks like? And if you, the basic point is you have to cover the whole area. If you want the bottom to be covered, you have to cover the whole area.
When you put them in the self-clean, they don't get ruined?
I don't know.
No, they don't.
Do you know what the grates are made? Like, do you know what your grates are made?
Oh, they're black. They're cast iron.
Is it GE? Is yours a GE?
It's a GE. Yeah. It's a GE.
The grates, your cooktop, is it a GE?
The whole thing is GE. It's one unit. It's a range, right? Okay, so warming drawers, very interesting. So warming drawers, the bad news and the good news. So the bad news first, but we don't hold like this. The Star Case says you cannot catch warming drawers. Okay, I say you can. Others say you can. I'm happy to follow them. So I wrote in my booklet one way to catch the warming drawer, which is the same way as basically an oven, is that you clean it away 24 hours, put a highest temperature for an hour. Of course, the highest temperature for an hour is not 550. It's a warming drawer. It's not a cooking drawer, even though it's probably 200-something. So after you do that, you still have to line the bottom, and you still should only warm things in a warming drawer that are totally covered, because it's only kosher to a certain degree. Rabbi Schwartz from the CRC of Chicago has a recommendation to put in a sterno. I'm going to read this to you, actually. Let's see, where is this here? Woman drawer 17. Here. simplest way, that's my opinion always, the simplest way to heat the warming drawer to the required temperature is to light one can of the type of canned fuel used to heat chafing dishes, e.g. Sterno cans, in the warming drawer. Make sure to leave the door of the warming drawer slightly ajar so there will be enough air to allow for combustion. Now, if you keep it closed, the Sterno is going to go out. Okay. One of the 7 to 8 ounce size cans should be adequate to heat an average size warming drawer to Liebman Kyle temperatures for about 2 hours. So that's what they recommend. Stick in a Sterno for 2 hours with the drawer open so it'll keep burning. As a little caution, before you begin, the warming drawer must be thoroughly cleaned and not used for 24 hours. So that's what he recommends.
Well, I was saying, why not just put it to the highest temperature that you were...
That's what I just told you, but...
I mean, why is the Sterno...
Oh, because I think that heats it... I think the Sterno heats it hotter than putting it in the warming. I think that's what he...
But by definition, the highest temperature that you've ever used it is the highest temperature that you turn it to. If you put it on a high...
That's correct. Kabbalah Kach Polto, that's correct.
Why would you...
Okay, but because the Star K thinks that doesn't work at all, that's why they say you can't kash warming drawers at all. So Rabbi Schwartz has a different idea, because I assume he's worried that what I recommended may not be sufficient. I'm not sure why, but because even though I say Kabbalah Kach Polto, then maybe there's a minimum threshold of how hot. So that's why I have always been taking that threshold by saying, okay, fine. So once you're done, now line the bottom, make sure everything's covered. And so I'm like covering my bases that way. So he may not like that, I never asked him. Right, but I came across this year, so I thought that's a different solution. Okay, microwave oven should be cleaned, wait 24 hours. Lots of different opinions how to clean a microwave. So one way is to fill it with boiling water, fill like a container with boiling water, a cup, a bowl or something, and then heat the microwave till it steams for 60 seconds, and it's now it is now kosher.
Really? Yeah, but they say some of the filters.
However.
You have to be careful.
Filters?
Filters in the microwave. They may have clumps.
I don't know what kind of filter has the microwave. Okay. Okay, now the
you mean like the vents? You mean like those little holes that are bent?
Also, if there's a little bit, someone can't be kosher.
I don't know. Anyway, the bottom plate microwave certainly cannot be kosher. That everybody agrees.
Also glass.
So whatever's on the bottom, so you have to put something on the bottom. Everybody put something on the bottom. Take a piece of styrofoam, take a piece of cardboard, put something on the bottom, and she'll put something on the glass on the inside. Saran wrap is fine. Just, you know, it's on the inside. Because the question is whether those can be kosher or not. So... there are those who say don't kosher microwaves. Yeah. We have the Nazis microwave. It's just not worth it. You know, for the 4 days, yeah. we don't bother. Right. But for some people, it is worth it. So that's... and the food has to be covered entirely when you are heating it. And a microwave is, in one sense, a microwave is like the Milchik Fleischer problem. This is not a Pesach issue. The general Milchik Fleischer problem. And people are less careful about this, I think. And that is that if they have one microwave... And they don't cover anything in the microwave, meaning when they say they don't cover it. They cover everything. And everything they cover is not covered. Because they tell you the microwave, you know, the microwave cover comes a hole in it. You know, there's a microwave, the covers that are made for microwaves have a hole in it. They want the steam to get out. So that steam that gets out, the steam get in. So that's problematic. So you still have to wait 24 hours and so on during the year. Milchik Fleischik problem. All microwaves is only covered, basically, and for Fleischik. Because that's, you know, like if we're in a rush to heat up the leftovers, so to speak, so we put in the microwave. And we have a little toaster oven, and that's the milk.
I had two.
So you had two. Okay, fine. You had two, fine.
So microwave, excuse me, Reverend Howe.
Yes.
So during the year, what I do is I have glass cover, like, you know, glass cleat and the glass cover.
And covered no hole?
No hole.
Oh, so that's fine.
That's what I do.
So that type
but
of cover would be fine.
What I do for dairy is I just heat uncovered. Is that... Does that sound...
That's fine.
Good.
If you eat one uncovered and one covered, that's fine.
They make, now you know how they make those meat, blue, dairy...
Right. I don't use the plastic because it's just not healthy, so
right.
I only use glass.
No, fine. If it's really covered, that's
it's
fine.
It's really covered.
So that's fine. Okay.
Can I ask you one question because I have to leave?
Okay.
Excuse me, sorry.
It's okay.
As far as fragrances and perfumes and things like that, that I have, let's say, out in the bathroom, like my husband makes me put everything away every year, is that halacha or is that just minhag?
So it's. I'll call it healthy halachic neurosis.
Okay.
Right. The reason why I say it's healthy halachic neurosis because it's a little neurosis because probably not everything has to go away, but if you have like expensive French perfumes, those probably are chametz gamur, and they might be edible too. In which case, they really, because they're made of grain.
Right.
Like the expensive French perfumes are made of grain.
Uh-huh.
Wheat grain,
so
white grain.
So it's better to put them.
So yeah, so that's, you know, so it's, so probably 90% of them are no problem. So
right.
You could look through every one of them and try to figure out which door can leave out, which I don't leave out. It's probably just easier to just put in a box and put them all away.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I say it's a healthy halach neurosis, because you know, 10% of it makes sense. 90% of it doesn't make sense.
Right.
But does it make sense to spend all that time to figure out which ones I can leave out and which ones I can't leave out? So that's
does
why.
Does that include also like body creams and things, or that's not?
No, so body creams. So he says on here, this is not from me, this is from the CRC. All varieties of body soaps, bars of soap, shampoos and stick deodorants, cosmetic powders, baby powders permitted to use regardless of ingredients. All types of ointments, creams, nail polish, hand lotions, eyeshadow, eyeliner, mascara, blush, foot and face powders, ink and paint may be used regardless of ingredients. Right? However, many liquid colognes, perfumes, hairspray, shaving lotions, etc. have restorable denatured alcohol should not be used. Unless they're listed as chametz free on a reliable Pesach list. So that's where that paragraph comes in.
Okay.
Lipstick, mouth, and toothpaste, that can
right.
come should not be used. Lipstick, mouth, and toothpaste, of course, go in your mouth.
Okay.
All right. But all these soaps, lotions, ointments, all those things are okay.
What about this with the toothpaste? Is Ain or Pepsodent okay?
So the ones that I know to be good are here, but there's a longer list which you can look at if you want. It's here. So this is alphabetical. You can
thank you so
here.
Much. See you tomorrow.
Okay. Anyway, toothpaste is here somewhere here.
You can go online and look also for specific.
Yeah, so there's a list of the toothpaste. The ones that have an asterisk are no good. The ones that don't have asterisk are good. Okay. If you have a water cooler and heater, so I think you can use them. You do have to do something to kasha them. So what I do is we have one and we clean it through. In other words, I empty it out, I clean it through, I clean the inside, I empty it, so there's no water anymore, I clean the inside, I run water through it, I pour boiling water over the two spigots, and we use it to water. The water for Pesach does not need a hechsher. I know a lot of waters have OUP. They didn't have a pee because the company said, we want a pee. They'd send somebody, mashgiach, to watch the water being, you know, coming in and going out, and they put a pee on it. So the OU policy is, nothing gets a pee unless it's mashgiach tamidi. So if a company feels it's worthwhile for them to do it, they do it, they get a pee on it. You don't need a pee on water that you buy before Pesach. Same thing, by the way, is true about milk. If you buy milk before Pesach, it also doesn't need a pee. Milk you buy in Pesach does need a pee, primarily because you want to make sure that the milk did not come from cows which had chametz on Pesach. That's a traditional long-term chumrah.
So eggs
also, it's good custom to buy eggs before Pesach. If you buy from a Vod store, it doesn't make a difference because the Vod stores, whatever eggs you get on Pesach, they have before Pesach.
Yeah, if you run out of eggs on Chol Moed,
you can go to AC, it's no problem. They have, you know, assuming they don't, I assume they're not going to run out.
But what is this? because you're afraid they're going to get the chicken.
Because the eggs have two problems. One is what the chickens ate, who laid the eggs. Which probably, you know, it's not such a big deal, but meaning it's not such a concern, meaning that you're going to have the chicken ate chametz on Chol Moed and then laid an egg and you have that egg, so that may be a problem. Right? Okay, it's a good thing. Okay,
right.
Okay, but the other is that eggs have this wash that they do egg wash, and that's why sometimes on eggs you see like junk on them, right? So that junk is whatever it is. So we want to get them before Pesach, so that junk will be batel before Pesach. So it's owned by a Jew before Pesach, which all the Vod stores. Or also on the Jewish Pesach, it's all batel, and that's why. So I remember growing up, 30 dozen eggs between my family and my aunt in my garage. 30 dozen eggs.
Is this something that Pesach. Loads of eggs. Yeah,
what is it?
So many cakes.
She wrote down to you in a special pot for boiling eggs.
Oh, so that's not a Pesach din. That's a regular din. The regular din for special egg pot.
My mother had it.
It's the fact. It's like this. So, in America, it's not such a big problem, but we still do this as a minhag, and that is that if the it's also minhag to always cook an odd number of eggs and not one at a time, 3, 5, 7, etc. Why? Because let's suppose you find a blood spot in an egg. So if you cook one egg, a blood spot, now you pass treif, right? Okay. If you cook three eggs, chances are if you find one blood spot. Two eggs will be fine. Now you have Rove is not blood spot. Your chicken, it's fine. Okay. It happens with Moshe Feinstein wrote that in America, you don't have to worry about blood spots because unless they're free range, whatever they are, those you have to worry. Because egg farms, don't have roosters.
In a cooked egg, right?
Yeah, it's talking about finding. It's talking about finding a blood spot. So Moshe Feinstein says America don't have to worry because in America, the problem with that is that it's a fertilized egg. So the blood spots we find eggs are not fertilized eggs because there's no roosters on the chicken farm. There's no roosters. Unless you have a free-range chicken, you know, eggs, so then they're free-range. So the roosters are chicken, they could be fertilized and so on, so then you don't know. But if you get, like, the eggs from A to Z, et cetera, the ones that are just normal, I don't know if that free-range even over there, but but that's a concern, why the minute is to cook an odd number of eggs and to have a special egg pot. It comes from there. It could be that the reasons don't apply anymore, but it still seems to be minimal to do that.
To use the pot, right, so that the pot doesn't become an issue.
So that, right.
And what is the issue with using a special pot? No, can't use that pot for anything else.
No, only eggs. Eggs.
So,
I have for eggs. No, I have a little pot. I only use for eggs.
You have a what?
So I think it's the same thing because of the blood spots. It might be because of the chicken wash from Pesach, but then it wouldn't be all year round. But it could be there's a Pesach issue in terms of the separate pot.
So can I just clarify? So over a whole abayit, if we need eggs, we're not eggs. You can go to A to Z or yeah. Any of these places.
Go to any odd places, no problem.
Michelle Davidson, because she was concerned that okay. She needs to buy 9 dozen eggs.
Yeah, no, yeah. Okay, so this year happens to be that the first day of Pesach is Shabbos, which raises a few issues. So issue number one is you may want to use the crock pot to make chillin, because obviously you can't use a regular crock pot, but you could use your housing, you know, the heat, if you get a new insert, right? You have to clean the outside, you need a new insert, you need a new top. But the heating element you could use. So again, it may not be worth it, but if you have a really great one and you want it, you could probably get a replacement insert and top and use that if you want. Okay, blech you need, obviously. In terms of Seder food preparations, so I think most people today, especially in our community, I think prepare everything before the Seder starts. But there are those who have been hugging to wait till the Seder starts to do things. Like the Vilna Gaon was known, he made the Moror when he got to Moror. Right? So you can't do that on Pesach. You can't do that on Shabbos. Right? Because you can't grind on Shabbos. So the basic point is that all the things you should be aware that because the Seder is Pesach, so and because the Seder is Shabbos, first night, so you have to be aware of all the things that normally you might think to do when the people are in shul, so you have to do them before. So whatever they are, charoset, salt water, mixing, grain and horseradish, food preparation, so on, just you have to remember Shabbos. So things you might normally do in the Seder, like traditionally, Karen boils the eggs. My mother's coming over and boil the eggs during the Seder for the Seder. You know, the eggs are going to be used, so they were fresh boiled, but you can't do that, right? So you have to boil them in advance. I mean, you have to, like, think. It's just this planning. I'm sure you'll, like, plan your Seder out. You have lists and so on. And so boil potatoes, right? All those things have to be done. And normally on a Seder night, you could do it during the Seder. Think what you normally do during the Seder. Am I allowed to do this during the Seder or not? And probably a lot of them you can. Second night, of course, there is Havdalah. Havdalah is part of the Kiddush, right? It's a long Kiddush. You have Kiddush, and you have Hamadim and Kodesh, the Kodesh. The Minhag is to use the candles that you lit for Yontif, to use those candles for the Bar Mitzvah age. The Minhag is not to use Besamim, because you still have Nesham Yisera. The preparation has to be made. This is not really unique to Shabbos. Preparations anyway for the second night of the Seder have to be made after the second day, after the first day of Yontif is over. It just happens to be that Shabbos is stricter, but you can't prepare anyway the first day of Yontif for the second day of Yontif. You can't prepare Shabbos for the second day of Yontif either. The last day is a Pesach because it's Friday and Shabbos, so you need to make Erev Tav Shilin on Thursday and Chol HaMoed for the last days. Okay, let's see if there's anything else. I know I made some notes on here.
Calcium pills with vitamin D made by Solgar, which has a half K. Can that be used on Pesach, or it's considered vitamins which shouldn't be taken?
So the vitamins, look, vitamins which are vitamins that don't have to be taken, so they could be skipped.
Calcium,
so that's a good question. So you have to ask your doctor, if I miss a week of calcium, does it make a difference?
Uh-huh, because
some doctors will tell you, you have to take them every day.
Sukkahs on my right foot.
No, so you ask your doctor. So you have to ask your doctor. Doctor, you have to take them, so you have to take them. That's all. That's really the bottom line. A vitamin is called a vitamin because you buy them in the store and they're not prescribed. But if the doctor says you have to take it, so then it's like it's prescribed. So, Like neonatal vitamins are prescribed, so you have to take them. If somebody is taking neonatal vitamins, they have to take them, they're prescribed. They're also vitamins. But the fact that, you know, over-the-counter first prescribed is just a question of whether a doctor said you have to take it. That doesn't matter what the FDA, you know, what category the FDA says. Okay. A few other things that I noticed here. Let's see. Purell is okay, which I think is a big, for me that's a big thing. You know. In terms of interesting kidneyos, so, what is it? No, no. I think they're all those. You know, they're all the same. They have whatever they have in them, but they're not edible, and they're halakhically you're allowed to use in shops and yet because they're liquidy. That's a question some ask about. You know, you can't use like creams. Again, non-medical we're talking about, but you can't use creams. So if you have like a hand lotion versus hand cream, so in shops you have to use a hand lotion. You can't use a hand cream. You have to use a liquid. You can't use a solid because you're not allowed to be mamareach. You can't spread it. The same rule applies. Regarding Yantif, but so Purell is number one liquidy, and number two, it's not edible. So for Schwartz actually, I guess, tested it out, and he said, you can use it. But I don't think he didn't write Purell, actually. He wrote hand sanitizers. Brita filters, this is also for the CRC. He said, Brita filters, you can use them. You should get a, I'm just going to read what he says. He says, you can Brita filter. You can clean the pitcher well and use it. You should replace the cartridge. All right? You should replace the cartridge, the filter cartridge.
And a Brita.
And a Brita filter. You know, those things. Okay.
Could I ask a question?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I asked last year also, you know, on a hot water urn that you used, you know, whatever, that can't be koshered? Is that correct?
Right, so...
So,
CRC, or Schwartz writes that if you know it's kept separate, and it's never put in a table, and it's never put in a chametz, then you can use it, and you don't have to kosher it. Okay. I don't disagree with this theory, but I disagree with this practice, because I know that the same urn that I use on Shabbos, and I only put water into, I use on Sunday, because we're left into it, and I put it into my cup, which has the Ovaltine in it, and Ovaltine for sure is chametz, and splatters. So I think most people, that's reality. Most people, even though their main use is Shabbos, but the leftovers they use on Sunday and Monday, and they're not careful how they do it, and it's not only for water. So on the other hand, if one would be careful it's only used for water, so then it would be okay. And he said you wouldn't have to kosher even, which I think is pretty nice cooler.
Right,
But again, it has to be kept separate from food, which I think is not the reality of how we do. It probably is the reality of how he does.
Right.
And he's at home. That's he's meticulous, and he does it that way. Probably after Shabbos, he probably puts it away. And he just spills the water out. Where, you know, I don't know. Maybe. Oh, that's a good idea. It's a good idea. It's underneath the sink. You need a plumber to do that?
No, you
can do it yourself. So if you can do it, it's probably a good idea. You do it, it's a good idea. Don't you fly like the...
You just used for cold water.
Do it before... Yeah, it doesn't matter, but it's got... It's a good idea. If you have to wait 6 months, do it before Pesach, do it before Sukkot. So that's a good way to remember.
Before, so I'm just thinking about it now.
It's like, you know, you change the... Light you know, the what do you call it? The smoke detector thing when you change the clock every 6 months. So there's a good thing. So it happens to be, I have a Sonicare toothbrush. So that's how you change it. So I change it every Erev Sukkot and every Erev Pesach. That's when I change it. So that could, I mean, after all, it's on Chol HaMoed anyway, a few days, but fine. So I can use it Chol HaMoed. So I know that's when I change it. So some things like that make sense to do. Okay. Kidneyos. It's interesting. I came across this list, I don't even know this list, but according, so this was from, also from the CRC. Kidneyos, a list of kidney spices, anise, A-N-I-S-E. All right.
Licorice.
That's fine. But then he says over here, this is the part that didn't get me because anise is licorice, fine. I thought it was page 17, but it's not page 17. Let's see if I can find it. Okay, so I don't know what page is. Maybe it's paragraph 17. Yeah, oh, it's number 17. So he poskins that CRC lists that anise, caraway, cumin, coriander, dill, and fennel are kidneys. So the one that surprised me was dill.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's right here.
It depends what they put in.
But it's right here.
It isn't just pure dill.
So I that's what he said.
Dry spice,
it
took, like, not fresh spice.
No, no, he said it's kidneys.
Oh, it's all...
It took me by surprise.
He
says there are more rules that anise and coriander are not kidneys. And then he goes on, he says, according to these spices listed in our shopping guide's kidneys. That's what he says. Although, maybe they're not kidneys, maybe there's some other problem. But he lists them. He lists them as you shouldn't use them.
He said spice in our cart.
Well, dill is a spice.
But corn is a
maybe
fresh
corn. Maybe he's referring to it
as dry. It's not like it's fresh. It could come from it. Corn also rolls a fresh.
No, but
it's dill doesn't have any it's not connection to a grain.
I wouldn't think. I don't know what he's
saying. I mean, it's like corn, at least, you know, the
oh, here it is. Okay. Dill, seeds. Oh, it's very interesting. So this is, now he's got a list. This is, I print that as whole shopping guide. So there's no pages here, unfortunately, so I can't tell you what page it's on. But it's the shopping guide. There's a section shopping guide. It's the second page shopping guide. It's alphabetical. It says dill, status, seeds, kidney oat, leaves are okay.
Yes, it's a dill plant.
So when you buy a dill plant, there's no seeds in it, I guess.
No.
Right.
No, dill seed is like when they use pickling spice or whatever.
Oh, so that's okay. So that's good to know. Okay, fine. Now I feel better. Because I can't imagine.
It doesn't make sense.
I was like horrified. I saw this morning. I said, I'm going home and tell Karen you can't use a dill. Like she's going to say, why? You know? I guess I don't know because what said so. So that's better. Okay. So that's why. Because seeds. So I guess that's the issue, that some of these seeds, so that's what he says. That's why. So anise, the same thing. Anise is kidneys. Anise itself, he says, is kidneys. But I guess the seeds of dill are kidneys, and the leaves are leaves. So the leaves are not kidneys. I mean, the same is true, like, I mean, in theory, a wheat plant is not chometz. You know, as long as you take out the grains. You know, the straw of wheat is not chometz. So it's strange, right? Okay.
It's like corn and all that's on the list because those are actually seeds.
Okay. So I think we finished. If you have any questions, I'll take other questions.
Yeah, I'm back to my induction furnace.
Okay.
What pot am I using to cook that with?
Any pot.